The focus for the next period till lunch is on prayer. It's not going to go into it at great depth. It's an orienting presentation. And that little icon might be a place where you'd like to be during these 3 months. John learned to pray there, listening to the heart of Jesus. And he wants us to go there too. Before I begin, just to maybe help, everything that's up there in my offerings to you, I do have a website, so it's all up on my website. Just put it up a couple of days ago. And the process, if you want to have a look at any of the pictures again or any of the reflections, my website is MB Fallon, which is my name. B Byron, my mother's maiden name was Byron, so I got that as a second name, Michael Byron. MBFallon.com. That's pretty simple. And there's the instructions on how to find this particular presentation. Click on over the left hand side, you can see For Christian Prayer. If you click on that, a page will open. Then you go down to the number 3, and there's a list, and the bottom one is Sabbatical Orientation Prayer. And that is also on the whiteboard outside, lest you forget. So, what is prayer? Thérèse of Lisieux puts it so simply, prayer is a surge of the heart, a simple look turned towards God, a cry of recognition and love, embracing both trial and joy. Teresa of Avila has two simple statements about prayer too that may make sense to you. Prayer is an intimate sharing between friends. It's taking time frequently to be alone with the one who we know loves us. And she also says, which is very simple but direct, look at him, she says. He never takes his eyes off you. And John of the Cross, the language of God, he is best, is silent love. Ruth Burroughs, who's an elderly Carmelite sister in England, in a book called The Essence of, On Essence of Prayer, writes this. And she tends to be, a lot of her books are over in that little temporary library we've set up for you over there. And if you haven't read it before, I would dare you to read it, because she's just direct. She just punches straight. You don't know what she's not saying. It's all so clear. Well, see what you think of this. Most of us find it almost impossible not to think of prayer as a special activity of life, an art that can be taught or learnt. Rather, the way we learn to play a musical instrument. So some of us are quick to feel we're proficient, and others that we're painfully handicapped. We're missing out on some secret, or have some lack in our nature, which makes prayer difficult, if not impossible, for us. We feel, you may not, but she's suggesting that we might, we feel there are certain laws governing prayer, techniques to be mastered. And when we've got hold of these, well, we can pray. Thus, we look around for the guru, for the one who's mastered the art and its techniques, and eagerly we await to be taught. When we take up a book or article on prayer, we shall probably detect that if we stop to think, we're looking for the key, the magic formula that's going to put our prayer right, enable us to make a go of this mysterious activity we call prayer. All this, she says, is proof that we're overlooking the fundamental fact that prayer is not a technique. It's a relationship. There is no handicap. There's no obstacle. There's no problem. The only problem would be not to really want God. We may want a spiritual life. We may want prayer, but do we really want God? And now I just want to offer you, they may make sense to you, it's drawn from a study of Teresa of Avila mainly, John of the Cross a bit. But there's some basic principles that govern prayer. First, it's important not to forget that since prayer is loving communion with God, and since God is always the one to begin the communion, the best prayer is the prayer which God is offering and initiating now, with you, with me, today. Let us gratefully accept and treasure whatever communion God is offering now. For God knows our present capacity to respond. We need to remember that to turn towards God, which, by the way, we've all done by coming here, to turn towards God is already to be in prayer. Second principle. We must constantly remind ourselves that God is offering us the intimacy of this communion. It's not a bad summary, probably, of what Pauline's been presenting to us for the last hour. God is always offering it, initiating it. We have to remind ourselves of that. Thirdly, the value or quality of our prayer is measured by the fruit which it produces in our lives. Our obedience, our humility, and especially our love. If the more you pray, the more you end up looking like a lemon, wrinkled without and bitter within, well then you're not actually praying. Is that all right? Pardon me. If, however, you're praying and your prayer is dry and unconsolable and whatever, but everyone around you finds you becoming more gentle, more loving, more patient, well, the prayer is fantastic. So it's measured by the fruit. Teresa writes in her Interior Castle, "It's in the effects and deeds following afterwards that we discern the true value of prayer." A fourth principle. Whatever happens, Teresa tells us, we mustn't abandon prayer. If we do, she offers the only remedy. You must begin again. The references are all there and you can find them. In fact, a lot of this material I've also put on a little folder that's on the back table. You can pick it up as you go out. It's got the references to this. Fifthly, we should not expect the journey to be one of simple progression. Prayer is not climbing an endless ladder. It's not climbing at all. There's not a ladder. It's not one of simple progression. And here she writes, there's no stage of prayer so sublime that it's not necessary often to return to the beginning. I'll have more to say of that in a moment. Furthermore, we see by comparison how sinful we are. This acts as a warning. It nurtures humility and safeguards us from thinking that any value we have comes from ourselves. It reinforces our longing to gaze on God, the sole source of all good. Sixthly, it's important to follow the advice of Teresa, and I'll be doing this with you in a moment, for half the time with you. Set our eyes on Christ. I don't have to convince any of you that that's absolutely vital. And it's probably the way all of us were taught to pray anyhow. Setting our eyes on Christ. This comes out of a lot of experiences. Her spiritual directors told her to leave the humanity of Christ aside, to go into this space, this beyond space, and transcend the humanity of Jesus and be in communion with God. Well, she thumps again and again through her book, don't do that. For God's sake, do not leave Christ behind. Set your eyes on him. Jesus will journey with us, leading us to a deeper knowledge of the true God, a knowledge that can come only through love. He will also lead us to a deeper knowledge of our real selves. For in Jesus we see what it means to be made in God's image and likeness. And we see who we're called to be as we watch him. Come, follow me. Seventhly, if we're serious about prayer, we must be resolute in turning away from sin. For it blocks out the light of God and opens our soul to darkness. I may be able to sin and fool myself. I may even be able to sin and fool you. And people do manage that. There's no way we can fool God. So to look into God's eyes and have God's eyes looking into you, it's not going to work. Why we're not committed to the journey and letting grace draw us away from sin. This will vary from person to person and according to each one's state of life. If we're serious about prayer, we must try to live virtuous lives in obedience to God's will, as revealed to us through the ordinary means of God's providence. And finally, the value of doing this, I'm not really quite sure of, because how could you possibly hold all this in your head? But you don't have to hold it in your head. But some of it might strike you, and to know that these principles of prayer, I think they sound are worth reflecting on at much greater length. So finally, while there's some value in studying prayer from the outside, we'll only truly be helped to the extent that we are, in fact, praying. Without prayer, we can learn what God is doing in people's lives, and that's good. We can get some idea of the intimate communion to which God is inviting us, and that's good. However, we can understand what other people tell us about prayer only to the extent that their words shed light on our own personal experience of praying. Teresa herself tells us, "As much as I desire to speak clearly about these matters of prayer, they'll be really obscure for one who hasn't had experience." So here's something we believe, and then I'll take you on a journey of looking at Christ. God, who holds us in existence, dwells in our hearts, and he wants us to live to the full. Jesus told us that. God does this by drawing us to ever deeper intimacy with God. That's what it means to live to the full. Whatever kind of mess I may be in, God is wanting to love me here and now. When we doubt this, we have the prodigal son, Mary of Magdala, the thief on the cross, and the leper, and dozens of others to assure us that this is true. So any prayer is good so long as it engages with Christ. I'm quoting from a quite excellent book, really. You may know it. Ian Matthew, it's the Welsh spelling, I-A-I-N, Matthew. It's on John of the Cross, but so simply and beautifully written. It's called The Impact of God. So that's who I'm quoting from here. "The Our Father is good," says Ian Matthew. "Praising is good. Pleading is good. Set or spontaneous, shared or alone, spoken or silent or sung, it's good. Scripture and psalms and liturgy and stillness, chapel or garden or mountain or car park, all this prayer is very good if, by believing and loving, we are attending to the other." Focus is on the other. And if our focus is on God, then God's desire is our focus be on his son Jesus, who shows us God. A brief moment only on how we make other people's prayer our own. We had some this morning in that beautiful poetry. It's a very simple prayer. Therese of Lisieux said, "Sometimes when I'm in a state of spiritual dryness, that not a single good thought occurs to me, I say very slowly the Our Father or the Hail Mary, and these prayers suffice to take me out of myself and wonderfully refresh me. She hasn't the energy to have thoughts of her own, so she borrows thoughts from others and prays them, and that refreshes her. Teresa of Avila writes, if you're going to recite the Our Father well, one thing's necessary, she advises her readers, one thing's necessary, you mustn't leave the side of the master who taught it to you. You're on your own, you're walking down the avenue, you're saying the rosary or something, and you're saying the Our Father. Well, Our, yes, it's everybody's, but Our in that case, if you're walking on your own, is you and Jesus. It's Our Father. He's praying it with you. Don't leave his side to pray it. And now for the next while, I'm going to look at the simplest prayer of all that we can all do, and we've probably all done, and everyone would encourage me to keep doing it till I die, and you too. This was John the Cross' advice to his novices. It's quoted in that book, and he says this, then I'm going to ask you to do it with me. Just close your eyes and I'll take you through an example. John of the Cross says, the first thing is to summon up the mysteries of Jesus. A scene from the Gospel. You might want to do it at random. You might want to take the one that's going to be prayed in the Mass the next day or whatever. But it's a scene with Jesus at the core of it. Imagine them. Be present to Jesus as he sits wearied at the well, hot, alone, waiting. Imagine, says John of the Cross to his novices, not in detail, but impressionistically, entering, not observing, not too close, though I'm going to take you through a Jesuit's example of one that is pretty close in a minute, but just imagine it. That's the first thing. Second, ponder in your mind the mystery that you've evoked. And these are not his words. Our spirituality here, and probably yours, we want to know how Jesus felt. We want to know what his experience was in that scene. Now, a lot of that is imagination, but it can be inspired imagination. That's what we're looking for. So be present to Jesus as he sits wearied by the well, hot, alone, waiting. Imagine, not in detail, but impressionistically. Then ponder in your mind the mystery that you've evoked. Jesus is there, weary, for me, for you. He demands no expiation. He wants to quench your thirst with living water, running water, life-giving water. And he allows me to sit by the well with him, if that's the scene that you've chosen. And thirdly, attentiveness to God in loving stillness. This is where the fruit of the other activities is plucked, and where the door of the mind is open to God's gift. Attentive in love, desire him there, adore him there, be with him in faith. Any of us can do that. It's prayer that's open to us. And there it is. Ian Matthew writes, the Son who elected to be with us Emmanuel, has opened new possibilities in prayer. In the Gospels, people do indeed ask Jesus for things. That's good. They do praise him for his ministry. But there's a deeper movement expressed by the attitude of the sinners whose concern is to sit with him, whose happiness is to know themselves received, welcomed by him. They're all quotes from the Gospel. The apostle's primary call is to be with him. And then it goes on, and to be sent out on mission. Of course, sent out on mission. But to be with him is first. In John's Gospel, this is the fruit of Jesus' resurrection. Abide in my love. Remain. Stay with. Be with him. I'm now going to take you, if I may, if you wish, through the meditation on this particular scene, which is found in John chapter 5. You know it, it's set in the pool of Bethzatha. There's a man there, he's been there for 38 years, and I'll take it, you know the scene. Quoting from verse 6 to 9 only, and then we'll go into a meditation, an example of this. When Jesus saw him lying there, and knew that he'd been there a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to be made well?" Pauline asked us to kind of ask, not exactly that question, but it's the same one. What are your deepest desires? And do you really want them? I presume you do, but it's a good question. Do you want to be made well? The sick man answered him, "Sir, I've no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up. And while I'm making my way there, someone else steps down ahead of me." And Jesus said to him, "Stand up, take your mat. Walk." At once the man was made well. He took up his mat and began to walk. So if you'd like to be comfortable, relaxed, do all the things you're used to doing, sit nicely and breathe and all the rest you've been encouraged to do. And then just close your eyes. I think it'd probably be best, but it's up to you. And I'm going to suggest things that you might want to do as you sit there. So let's imagine the pool. Got five covered walkways. Imagine the surroundings the way you imagine them. That's all we need. What kind of place is it? Is it clean? Dirty? Large or small? Notice the architecture. And the weather. Now let the whole scene come to life. See the people near the pool. How many people are there? What sort of people? How are they dressed? What are they doing? What kind of illness are they suffering from? Are they talking or silent? Now, it's not enough for you to observe the whole scene from the outside, as if it were a movie on a screen. You must participate in it. What are you doing there? Why have you come to this place? What are your feelings as you observe the scene and watch these people? What are you doing? Do you speak to someone? Who are you speaking to? Now, notice the sick man of whom the gospel passage speaks. Where in the crowd is he? How is he dressed? Is there anyone with him? Walk up to him. Speak with him. What do you say to him? And what is his reply? Spend some time getting as many details of his life and person as he offers you. What sort of an impression is he making on you? What are your feelings while you converse with him? As you're speaking with him, you notice out of the corner of your eye that Jesus has entered this place. Watch him. Watch his actions, his movements. Where does he go? How does he act? What do you think he is feeling? Jesus is now coming up towards you and the sick man. So what are you feeling now? You step aside when you realize that he wants to talk to the sick man. What is Jesus saying to him? What does the man answer? Listen to the whole dialogue. Dwell especially on Jesus' question to him. Do you really want to be made well? Now listen to Jesus' command as he tells the man to Get up and walk. What's the first reaction of a man? His attempt to get up. The miracle. Notice the reactions of the man. Notice Jesus' reaction. And your own. Jesus now turns to you. He engages you in conversation. Talk to him about the miracle that has just taken place. Is there any sickness that you are suffering from? Physical, emotional, spiritual? Speak to Jesus about it. What does Jesus have to say to you? Listen to his words to you. Do you really want to be made well? Do you really mean what you say when you ask to be cured? Are you ready to take up the consequences of a cure? You've now arrived at the moment of grace. Do you have the faith that Jesus can cure you? That he means to cure you? Do you have the trust that this will happen as a result of the faith of the whole group here? Listen to his mighty words as he pronounces the words of healing over you. As he lays his hands on you. What are you feeling? Are you sure that these words that you've heard are going to have an effect on you? In fact, have already had their effect on you. Even though you may perceive nothing tangible at the moment. And now just spend 2 or 3 minutes in silence, pondering the mystery.